Welcome to the special edition of the Red Compass Labs After Hours podcast, recorded live at EBA Day 2022 in Vienna. As we recorded this in the midst of the hustle and bustle of the event, you will hear some background noise, which hopefully imparts some of the exciting vibe of the first in-person payments event for Europe since 2019. Enjoy.
Good morning, Russ. Thanks for joining us on our After Hours podcast. Great to have you here.
Pleasure.
Russ is the head of products and strategies at The Clearinghouse. What does The Clearinghouse do for those people in Europe who might not have heard of you?
So what do? So we run a few payment systems. If you'd liken us to EBA Clearing, so we're owned by a bunch of banks, responsible for traditional payment systems and new ones. So in the US, we run ACH, check, and chips, which is our high-value system. In all of those products, we compete with the Fed and roughly split market share across those three products. But also, obviously, we run RTP. So that came to life in November of 2017. And for now, we're running that as, you know, our own in the marketplace. FedNow is apparently going to show up and compete with us at some point. So we'll wait for that day. But right now, we're having a good time with RTP and rolling that out in the US with a lot of really interesting use cases.
That's great. And RTP is 100% ISO 20022. 100%
ISO 724. So all the bells and whistles you'd expect in a real-time system.
Okay. How's that kind of fitted into the US market in terms of adoption? Have you got any tips to share from the adoption of ISO 20022?
So I think it's gone slower than I think we all would have hoped. And I think the one thing I think is market infrastructures we often forget is banks have to implement. And it's really two implementations. One is just the connectivity and back office systems. But more importantly, it's developing product and rolling out product to their customers. And that can take a while. We spent a lot of time working with the banks to collaborate around product ideation and rollout, but that takes time to hit the marketplace. So I think we're starting to hit our stride now. We're seeing a lot of new products coming to market. And most importantly now is request for payment. And that's been a huge effort. It was a very strategic investment for the banks. And it's one where, as you think about the U.S. market is heavily debit-oriented. So there's about 29 billion ACH transactions a year. Of that, about 14 billion are ACH debits, traditional bill pay. We think that's a market that's ripe for disintermediation by RTP and RFP. It really brings control and transparency back to the consumer, and you eliminate all the downstream problems with debits where you don't have a debit mandate and transparency. So we're very excited to be doing that, and you'll see a lot of press around that, I think, over the next 3 or 4 months.
Brilliant. Effectively transforming the U.S. market.
Yep.
And I think, like, you know, request for payment is something, like, literally you have a huge use case in the retail segment and also like SME and corporate, right? Because right now with the change of the society, with the things like creator economy, gig economy, and also like debt management, particularly in time of crisis, like, you know, like we are now in the post-COVID period, is quite key, right?
I think it's actually two things. So one use case we didn't anticipate on RTP when we said about it was actually payroll. So we thought payroll, traditional big iron, ACH, dispatch, it works. But what we found is quite the opposite. And it really speaks to your point in terms of where is society economically. And somewhere, depending on the math, somewhere around 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. So that's a huge problem societally. A lot of that contributed to payday lending and all the bad things that kind of come out of payday lending. You essentially get stuck in a debt trap, et cetera. So what we're seeing is one is gig payments. So if you're an Uber driver or a Grubhub driver, you can pay out RTP instantly at the end of your shift or even at the end of a ride if you want. So we see a lot of that. But increasingly, it's actually earned wage access. So it's payroll on demand. And so some of the larger U.S. service companies, so Walmart would be an example, are actually offering that to their employees. So rather than that 2-week pay cycle, they've earned a week's pay, they can elect for it, and they can get paid today for that week. So that can pay for that unexpected bill. So that helps the cash flow on the front end, and obviously our request for payment on the back end, where you've got that full transparency and you manage when precisely. And I think the other data point we see in the U.S. is how many people pay late cycle. So right, it's right up against the limit as to when that bill is due, which creates a lot of cost for billers because it's usually coming in through their call center or internet. And so request for payment solves for that.
Russ, a quick question for you. You know, you're a U.S. organization. This is an EBA event for Europe. Why are you here?
So we've actually been coming to this for years, and originally it was because of chips, right? So chips is our wire system. 95% of all the transactions on chips are cross-border. And so we've always been very engaged with the European community because of that and the affiliation with EBA and Euro 1. So that's really been the reason here historically, but more recently it's really been about RTP and RT1. And so we've had some press recently, proof of concept last year, and a pilot that we're going to run this year to connect those two systems and essentially have instant payments between the US and the European corridors. So we're very excited about that. We think it's a game changer. You know, for those that are thinking about CBDC, may take note that the real market is actually doing something to solve the problem well before CBDC ever shows up. And so we're very excited about it. We'll run the pilot late this year. We've got 11 or 12 banks committed right now, and they're major banks. That'll probably run through most of next year. There's some rule changes we need to make in order to make it more generally available to our communities. But at the same time, we're looking at other corridors. So who's next? And so logically, for the US, we look at Canada. They're putting a new RTP rail in, RTR, in the Canadian context. That's going to come live next year. Here in Europe, we could look at Switzerland, we could look at UK. Australia might be another market where you've got a recent implementation. So I think you'll see this spread, hopefully quickly. The way we designed IXB was to take all the complexity and put it in the middle. So let's not put complexity on the banks. Let's not put it on the IPS systems themselves, because that just introduces way too much friction. So hopefully that plays out in terms of how the pilot develops and how the next corridor evolves.
And in terms of like next step as well, are you considering connecting RTP to effectively like Project Nexus?
So we haven't talked to Nexus, so that's theoretical at this point. But there's question, some speculation, there's some news to drop that it'll become less theoretical and more real. So don't know. We connect to Mass, so to Singapore, Thailand, certainly I think we do those. I mean, interestingly, Vocalink is our technology provider, so Vocalink MasterCard, they've implemented around the world. So arguably you could work with them to actually make it an out-of-the-box solution. So I think, that's an option as well. For any market that's implemented that technology, it might be an easy path to implement IXB. Not to front run it, because that hasn't, nobody's said we're doing that, so that you could speculate that's something we might have a conversation about.
It's really, really exciting. Maybe we can switch gears a little bit. November's not far away this year. There's a big little change called ISO 20022.
Yeah,
of course, Target 2 will be migrating. What's happening in the U.S. in that space?
So we were scheduled to go as a U.S. market in November of next year, 23. And for a long time, we had essentially agreed with the Fed we'd move together. That's a challenge. It's a big market, obviously. Unfortunately, the Fed put us on notice, I guess about 6 months ago now, that they were likely not going to make the move. And that was official last week, where they've announced they're going to delay until at least first quarter 2025. So that really created a big issue for us to say, do we move forward? And as I said, CHIPS is an international system. If you think about the international banks and the corporates that rely on that system, to wait a year plus for ISO beyond the year that we're already waiting, beyond the European migration, wasn't sustainable, we didn't think. So we made a decision to move forward. So CHIPS will move November 23 as planned, and I think that'll be beneficial to the community, certainly for this community.
Absolutely.
And I think the other thing we're looking at in CHIPS is extending operating hours. So it's been a long simmering debate within the business committee, within our membership. And so what we're looking at right now, so we run 21 hours, 5 days a week right now. We're looking at possibly adding a Sunday. So we'd actually open up on a Saturday night. There's a lot of business interest in that, essentially for the Middle East, which is a market that's not captured today. And we see that as a step towards potentially, maybe it's 21-7, before it's 24-7. That's got more technical hair on it, but we want to continue to press that forward. And frankly, just continue to press the Fed.
And again, maybe that means that CBDCs don't have quite as important. If you're already covering all of the.
You would hope that people might look at it that way. It's interesting. CBDC. A lot of people focus on. It's just another rail. We integrate another rail, and I actually say it's more damaging risk to the business and to the business of banking is actually innovation. Because the scarcest resource in any bank today is its technology assets. And if you ask them to now go and focus on a mandatory connection to something they really don't need, you're going to take all that technology resource and smarts and redirect it to something that's not about innovating, not about creating a new product, not about competing with fintech. And that's actually going to be more damaging to the banking industry than anything else. Certainly, people say it could create a run on deposits and all these other things, which are theoretically true. But I actually think in the near term, if the central banks were to go ahead and we're asking the banks to essentially front it, that integration challenge distracts massively from their ability to serve their customers.
And so I actually think that's probably the bigger risk around CBDC.
This is an interesting point, because if you look at, like, you know, all of the challenge that we have in cross-border payment and the delivery of the CPMI roadmap, the fact that actually everyone is taking different approach to solve the issue, it prevents you to focus to the next step, which are potentially like more alignment around AML, fraud. You mentioned extension of the operating hours. This will be a challenge for the bank as well to comply to this. So, yeah, like...
Yeah, it's an endless list of regulatory to-dos,
right?
You don't need one added to that list, especially if you're solving for the problems that are...
If the regulators want to focus on something that would make a difference, go focus on compliance, right? So if we can improve the compliance regimes... So that's not necessarily a regulatory issue as much as a political issue, but there's more to be done there that would be helpful for the industry and the community. Recognize what modern technologies can do. I want to apply properly, but I think that's a better use of central bank and regulatory bandwidth.
And I think for me, like, you know, coming back a bit to what you said regarding the Fed delaying the ISO 222 migration, for me, like, it may create more complexity for the bank as well. Like,
absolutely.
Because all of a sudden, like, you have some wells on ISO, you have other key wells as well, not on ISO. So how do you manage that internally? It may be that banks leveraging translation solution may need to let them in place for a bit more longer to be compatible with the old MT.
That's a very fair point. And so it was one that we raised with our member banks. And it was, let's ask them the question. Can they manage it where they've got a coexistence of a traditional Fedwire model and an ISO rich model? And they felt they could. We actually even thought about, do we provide them a translation engine to the community? We spent a fair bit of time socializing, discussing that, and actually the decision was no, not necessary. So hopefully that plays out to be true. But I think right now there's some confidence that we can actually do this.
Fantastic, Russ. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Brilliant discussion. So many exciting topics, actually. Driving change. I'm super excited for IXP.
And we didn't even talk about tokenization.
We didn't. We're going to have to keep that for another time.
All right.
But thank you very much.
Thank you,
Russ.
At Red Compass Labs, we exist to help open the doors of finance to all and to protect those who enter. I hope today's discussion sheds some light for you on the fascinating future of payments that is unfolding all around us. We really appreciate the support of our audience. So if you've enjoyed this discussion, please show your support by giving us a thumbs up, hitting subscribe, and clicking on the bell to get notified when new content arrives in future. Also, don't be shy about giving us feedback. We really appreciate your comments and suggestions for topics and guests. That's all for this time. Catch you on the flip side.